A4.
Number 12A.
We came as far as truth yesterday, and so we take the last synonymous term, love, and just try to get the feel how this last synonymous term again differs completely from truth. We could see in truth it was mainly that fact that there is in being a great power at work that affirms life, that affirms and claims that which is. So that which is true and can never be destroyed, can never be gainsaid, that which is true is always pervading everything and affirming itself as what it is. When we come to love, then we get the sense of absolute fulfillment and completion where everything is at rest. It gives the sense of God as mother, while Jesus introduced God as life and father and as son. It is mostly Mrs. Eddy that introduced the sense that God is mother, in the sense that mother is that which embraces and circles all. So that we get now a feeling that within the womb of the Divine Mother, everything is embedded, everything is encircled, that the nature of being is so that it embraces all. Within that mother goes on an eternal impartation of all good. Love can never be without its object of manifestation. I think this is something which we have to see in order to get away from the humanistic or Christian sense of love to the divine and scientific sense of love. Love means this, that love always imparts everything it has and never loses sight of that which it imparts and therefore is never without its object. So that there is a terrific unity between God and idea. This is love. That unity between principle and idea cannot be destroyed, cannot be severed. That there is no possibility whatsoever to disunite principle and idea. So that within our consciousness we have a sense of love when we see that actually in the whole of being that divine principle is never without its representative. And that's love. That the divine principle is always united with its idea. That's love. That's why the principle is love. Principle only shows that principle is related to idea and interprets itself through its idea and interprets itself through the system of idea. But love comes along and says, and I include that, I embosom that, I keep that relationship absolutely intact and nothing can interfere it and nothing can sever that relationship between principle and its manifestation as idea. So that there is no possibility whatsoever that love or the whole of being could not be manifested everywhere as its idea. So therefore love is that great impartation, but not only a great impartation, but it also is a great protection to everything because it says, I hold everything within myself. I embrace all ideas, the whole creation. So we get the sense of love being all-embracing, all-inclusive, everything that has to do with union and unity, with that indestructible unity where the noumenon and phenomena are one and are so closely united that no phenomena can be non-expressed. All phenomena are expressed in the concept of love. This love is inexhaustible. It is just the superabundance of being, and there is no exhaustion for the impartation of love. It has a great sense of life in it, naturally, because life gives and gives. But it also shows that because it is love, it draws inexhaustibly from its own source. Love, therefore, because it is all-including, all-embracing, inexhaustible, gives a sense of universality. That love takes everything in and embraces everything, and so gives a sense that wherever we are, the magnitude of being is expressed, is established. This gives a sense of perfection, which is one of the great ideas of love, that because truth claims everything that what is, because truth claims all that is in life, love comes along and says, and this is all, and therefore perfect, and there is nothing missing. There is not one thing missing in that perfection. Because being is perfect, and we go out from perfection and never leave perfection and see that perfection is always expressed and represented as perfection, we get a sense, humanly, of fulfillment. Perfection translates itself to the human sense as a sense of infinite achievement, of infinite success and fulfillment and consummation of the idea, where we see that everything that has started in mind is being fulfilled in love. That mind as the creator does not instigate something, but that love will see to it that through spirit, soul, principle, life, and truth, that idea is being fulfilled in every detail and to the last digit, so to say. And so gives a sense of consummation, of fulfillment. Fulfillment of what? Fulfillment of a great plan. Love is characterized by the great design of love, by the great plan of love, by the great program that comes to a fulfillment and shows that in being everything belongs to the infinite plan, that nothing happens blindly, that nothing happens by chance, by accident, but that everything is, because that mother includes everything, everything is planned and designed and therefore is fulfilling the idea of plan, which in a religious sense gives us a sense of holiness, of wholeness and holiness, of absolute glory, because it shows that all space is pervaded by that plan of love, and that through that plan of love, really every detail has been taken care of. That's why we have also in love, I don't think I have it on the list, we all have those wonderful ideas of the mother, which gives a sense that love, the nature of being as love, cares for everything. It's caring, it's nurturing everything, it's, what is the other term? Well, caring, nurturing, cherishing, yes, cherishing every idea, you see, so that every idea gets the full attention of being. That no idea is inferior to the other, that it is. Therefore, love is impartial. That's another idea of love, that it is absolutely impartial. It gives actually to every detail the whole of being. And therefore, because of that, it imparts a sense of peace and a sense of rest, because everything is taken care of. And this is what the seventh day of creation is also teaching, that on the seventh day, really, God didn't create anything more. The seventh day of creation is actually not the day of creation. It's a day of no more creating. It's a day of rest, of fulfillment, of perfection, of contemplating perfection. That's the day of rest and of peace. And whenever we want to have peace within ourselves, we can just do one thing. We just take the standpoint of love and go out from perfection and only contemplate love's own idea. And when we contemplate only love's own idea, nothing else, and love's idea is the only thing that love can see. That's why it says that love imparts the clearest idea of deity. Mrs. Eddy says, you see, it imparts the clearest idea because love is that attitude which never loses sight of loveliness, which never loses sight of only looking at its own perfect idea. And therefore, you can see that that gives us a terrific sense of peace and rest, of tranquility, of glory, and of glorification, and you just feel really in the arm of love, well protected, well cared for, self-contained in the infinite impartation of love. So this gives you that climax. Love is always the climax, is the acme of the whole range of the synonymous term, and therefore all what we need to do is to reflect that love as accepting the completion of the idea, accepting and welcoming and letting it in the perfection of being, being open to it and taking it in, accept, 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 accept the perfection. That's the day of rest. Yeah, this is perhaps some kind of tone of love which we get here. Now, when studying those synonymous terms, in whatever way you feel it is right to do, either through the textbook or some of our literature, we also have to keep in mind that parallel to this study, we can also bring up or make a list of the negatives of those seven synonymous terms. It is of great value, especially in practice, of great value to know what are the counterfeit of mind and spirit and soul, of principle, life, truth and love, so that we know the specific arguments against those great seven natures of being. So you could also take those. Actually, in the compendiums, we have a certain number of negatives at the end of the compendium. And one begins to see, you see, that mind, the divine mind, has as its counterfeit all the various concepts of mortal mind, be it the human mind, the erring mind, the erroneous mind, the personal mind, a material mind, a corporeal mind. All that is the counterfeit of the one divine mind, like human opinions, human thinking, illusions. All this is the counterfeit of that one great intelligence that knows everything right. Or you take the counterfeit of spirit, and naturally there you have as a counterfeit matter, but you also have the flesh. Naturally you have as a counterfeit all the counterfeits of the ideas of spirit. That's quite clear that you have disorder, for instance, as a counterfeit of order. You have as a counterfeit of unfoldment, frustration, things like that, as a counterfeit of fruit, fruitlessness. And so in this way, one begins to learn also what are the counterfeits. The counterfeit of soul is mostly the testimony of the physical senses, its material sense, its sin, naturally, its counterfeit per se, because it's the opposite of the identity of soul, the deflected image and like a deflected image, which is no more a likeness, no more the true identity. And the counterfeit of principle is naturally person, personal sense, people, human theories, material theories, dogmas, isms, ologies, and so on. All that counterfeits really the system of the divine principle. Or you take life, and naturally there we get as a counterfeit death, lack, as a counterfeit of the fullness of life, routine, as a counterfeit of the newness of life, getting into ruts, you know, the counterfeit of the spontaneity of life. And so one begins to get the sense of the false concept of life. counterfeit of truth is error, naturally error, but also mortal consciousness, human consciousness, erroneous consciousness. It is the counterfeit of health, namely sickness, disease, the counterfeit of the true remedy, material remedies, human remedies, or you have the counterfeit of love, which is quite a lot of characteristics which are only too common to us, namely fear, hate, jealousy, envy, partiality, cruelty, and so on. You just get the whole list of these counterfeits. Why should we know those counterfeits? They are practical insofar as in human life we encounter first the counterfeits and not usually the facts of being. We encounter fear, we encounter jealousy, we encounter sickness, we encounter frustration, we encounter all these negative aspects of the divine being. And if we know the counterfeits, we also know how to handle them, namely with the fact about which these counterfeits are a lie. And so through that knowledge, our thought is at once directed towards the facts of being. And little by little, something in us becomes a reflex action that the moment we see or feel or hear something negative, that something positive within us which counteracts that counterfeit just wakes up within us, just wells up in our consciousness. Like a cultured musician, when he hears a wrong tone, he doesn't so much hear a wrong tone, it wells up in him the right tone in him. And only because he knows the right tone, he can detect the wrong tone. That's why I can never detect the wrong tone, because I don't have a cultured sense of music. But the musician will do that. For him, wrong tone is not just something awful. It is also an impelling motion to see the right idea, the right tone, and to correct it in his mind and just replace that wrong with the right. And so it is within our life practice. Within our life practice, it is so that whenever we encounter these false tones, that we go right back to the tonality of the divine being. And through knowing the counterfeits and the facts, we are in the position to tip quickly on the true facts. All right, so in your study, I think it would be good to make also a list of these negatives. Well, these are the seven synonymous terms, and I just pinpointed them quickly, and I would dearly love to see a group of people who take really the time and love and energy in investigating, and not only investigating, but pondering, loving the synonymous terms over a year, two or three, just pondering them, loving them, you know, just stand in awe before that study. It shouldn't be a study that has to be done. It is a study that we are allowed to do, that we are favored by being to do. We should, so to say, stand in awe before the fact that we are allowed to investigate those great facts of being. And one feels a great sense of humility and being very favored and blessed to be drawn to the insight that this study is the biggest study we can ever do in our life, because there is nothing bigger to investigate than being itself. We can investigate little things. We can investigate a little sentence in the textbook. We can investigate how she used this and that queer term, that term which perhaps here and there appears as a side mark, and investigate that and see the fineness and the detail of it. But all that doesn't amount to very much compared with that great fundamental task of investigating the capitalized terms. I remember in those days, you know, naturally, we were in a stage at that time when John Dawley began to see that in those synonymous terms would lie the science of Christian Science. and began to see the differentiation of one synonymous term compared with the other one. I remember we felt like kings and emperors of this world. We felt nothing is bigger in this world than what we are doing. We were really full, like a mother expectant, in a state of pregnancy and of expectancy and thinking, my word, if we can give birth to that sense, to know exactly what the nature of God is, and not in an anthropomorphic way, and not in an undifferentiated way, not in an amorphous way, but in a very clear-cut, classified, structured way. I remember those days when that broke on us. We just felt big with expectancy. And I know that nobody can ever tell me and has to tell me how a mother feels when she expects a baby. I know it. I really know it. Because when one feels that one is carrying the baby of divine signs within one's consciousness, one sees the promise of it, the expectancy of it, the greatness of it, the bigness of it, the blessing of it. One just feels that because one has to have a motherhood sense for that. In another way, it doesn't really happen. The birth is something that takes place in the motherhood sense of consciousness. Yes. So we go to the next point in our table of content. We left it off there at the point of 1D, where we were here investigating the ideas characterizing the seven synonymous terms for God. So we come to the next one, to E, where we now investigate the combining of the seven synonymous terms, where we are now asking, but do these seven synonymous terms stand by itself as if each one would actually exist in a watertight compartment without any relationship to any other synonymous term? And so we must say no. And this is what I will touch upon under this heading. Did you put it down? E, combining the synonyms. It's an abbreviation for, actually we should say, combining the synonymous terms for God. But we have a shortcut language, and when we say the synonyms, we mean the seven synonymous term for God. Yes. That okay? All right. So, what is the fundamental problem here? See, now we have found, so to say, our spiritual root notions of reality. We have been reducing the infinite ideas into seven classifications of mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love, so that instead of having infinite items or digits, we have only seven. And this is the method that mathematics uses, and so we shouldn't be surprised that right at the beginning of the textbook, already after two pages, actually on page three, but there are only about two pages text, Mrs. Eddy already gives in the marginal heading the title, The Spiritual Mathematics. And so we should not shun back to use mathematics as a symbol, just as in the biblical age they used nature, wars, politics, and so on as symbols to express spiritual ideas. And so we go now slowly into the spiritual mathematics.